Who is your daddy?
I am the father.
You fathers will understand.
My father taught me many things.
I got an idea. How about you all sit there quietly while I make dad noises?
Welcome to Fathers of the Grind, episode 28. My name is Tim Nestor. I'm here with Derek Teague. Say hello,
Derek.
Yay!
I'm here. Be nice.
We are a couple of gamers who also happen to be dads and husbands to wives who aren't necessarily gamers. And so we embrace this outlet of being able to totally nerd out about games. And so it's actually kind of refreshing to break away from the responsibilities of parenthood and of marriage and just talk about games. Basically be teenagers again for a little while.
Well,
that's what this is about.
It's always exciting, like, when I have to tell my wife, like, hey, can you keep the kids out of the room because I'm going to be recording? And she gives you that look like, okay, nerd.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I'll do that for you, nerd. Yeah.
So what's your family doing right now? We're recording on Saturday, June 16th.
Yeah.
And for you, it is noon. So what is your family doing right here in the middle of the day that it's so quiet at home?
I got to sleep in, which was really, really nice. And then I asked my son if he, the son I care about. Ian.
Oh, my gosh.
No, I asked Ian, because him and I had been watching Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. We started, probably 6, maybe even 8 months ago. And we got, like, through the first 13, 14 episodes, and I just stopped watching it. Because I think I've talked about this on the podcast before. Mm-hmm. I'm the type that, with the little bit of free time I have, like, actual time to myself, I prefer games over movies, shows, and all that stuff. So, anyways, I got to the point where I was like, yeah, I don't really want to watch it. Well, I decided I wanted to start watching again, and then I was actually looking for a movie to watch with the kids, and couldn't find anything. So we decided, well, why don't we continue the show? So I started continuing the show, and I'm probably, I think I just finished episode 19 of season 1. And it's a really good show. Like, I mean, you've talked about it before. It's definitely got cheesiness to it.
Especially at the beginning. I think towards the end of season 1, they start to find their footing a little bit.
Exactly. They're now starting to get into where it's constant twists. In fact, I think it was after episode 17, I thought that was, because I'm watching it on Netflix, I thought that was the first season finale because it had so many twists. And the way it ended as if it was like, hey, we're cutting this season off. Yep. And it didn't. It just kept going. I'm like, really? That's a perfect like season finale show. But so far, enjoying that. So that's what we did. We started it again last night, and we continued it this morning. So me and him have been watching that show.
And so where are they today, though? It's real quiet on,
they're trapped
on your side.
Actually, they're outside picking weeds for money. And then when they come in, they can watch TV in another room, hopefully.
Gotcha. So we might, if we hear noise in the background, that might be, it might be the weed picking is done.
The whole family's home. There's a good chance, good forecast for a loud noise of thunder.
Forecast for noise. Yeah, so it is just after 10 a.m. here in Colorado, and my wife just took all 5 of our kids to the gym. Our gym has a really cool like kids area where they can play games, and I think there's a little bit of like, there's a bunch of exercise space. They can play games and dodgeball and whatever, but there's also like a little video game room and TV room. They can watch shows and hang out. So they're there for the next probably hour and a half, I would guess. And so that's my my quiet window of time, which is great because my wife and I then could still continue our binge watching of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. We're almost done with the third season.
Okay.
And so, we knocked out 2 more episodes last night. So, yeah, it's one of those things where even though there are games that I am playing and would really like to spend time playing, it's kind of a coin toss for me. Like, I really have equal interest in watching Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and in playing a game. So if my wife comes walking in with an armful of snacks and like, hey, let's watch something, I'm totally on board. Like, let's do that. And if she's like, you know what, I'm just going to do my own thing, you can play a game, then I'm excited for that too. So it's kind of strange. Usually I either want to watch a show, like you mentioned before, you usually pick games first. Either I'm really into a show and that's all I want to do, or I'm really into a game and that's all I want to do. But right now I'm kind of straddling that line a little bit. So yeah, so that's what we're doing. The Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is a great show. I think it's underrated. I think it gets crapped on because the first, I would say maybe even up to the first dozen episodes or more, are pretty standard, like procedural, kind of a crime type of a drama where they're trying to solve a mystery. And there's a little bit of superpower stuff thrown into it. It's just set in the Marvel Universe. But then it really takes some turns and some twists. Certain characters aren't who you thought they were, and then they just introduce some really interesting things. I will say that now, where we are now in the show, at the end of season three, the character development, some of the stuff they do with powers and stuff like that, which isn't overboard, but it's enough, it to me feels like a show that Heroes should have been, which to me turned out to be a real crap show. Heroes should have been something like this, but it wasn't. So
Heroes started off really good, and then
it was great.
Fell apart.
I even think that the finale of the first season, where they all kind of, you know, collide in that one block in the city, the whole save the cheerleader, save the world storyline finally comes to a head, and it's actually quite interesting, but then, man, did it, I lose interest after that. But
yep, it fell apart.
Anyway, all right, so here we are, right in the middle of July, and who knew that this month would see the release of one of the biggest phenomenons in gaming in years? There's been plenty of big phenomenons that have come and gone, especially with iPhones and Android phones, where you've got things like Candy Crush that will come through. I think the game we saw release just last week is probably a bigger phenomenon that I've seen, at least, since the Wii. It's probably the biggest thing I've seen since the Wii in terms of everyone is talking about it. Everyone is playing Pokemon Go. Everyone's playing it. And my reaction to it is just kind of, I'm surprised. I'm shocked. I like the Pokemon games. I've talked about that before. My kids like playing them too. I think they're pretty fun portable games. I never thought that an app, a very light version of this game, which is pretty much just the collection side, would take the world by storm, but that's exactly what it's done. So let me, before I, you know, share some info about how this game has done so far, have you downloaded it and tried it yet?
Yeah, so I, first of all, you know how I feel about Pokemon, and anybody who's listened to our show knows I don't like Pokemon.
I assume that the Pokemon and Dirty Filthy Casual combo really grinds your gears.
Yeah, so I actually had to go to a party last week, and I knew Pokemon had released even though I'd stayed off Facebook, but I didn't pay attention to it. I didn't download it. I didn't care. And like you said you were surprised by this. I'm completely surprised by this. And so I get to the party, and my pastor comes up to me. He's like, "Hey, did you download Pokemon Go?" Like, he was all excited.
Yeah.
And I was like, "No, I don't play Pokemon games. They're, like, crap." He's like, "Dude, you gotta play this. It's so great." And him and his kids just start telling me how great it is and how you have to download it and it's free. And I said, "Okay, I'll do this." And I think I talked about this a couple weeks ago, how Eli's been asking for a Pokemon game. He's like all into these Pokemon cards, and now he wants a Pokemon game. So I told them what I would do is lie to him and tell him that I bought it, that it costs money, but I bought this. I sacrificed my money so he could have Pokemon Go on my phone.
To make him appreciate it more? Or
exactly. So it makes it look like he... Help me get him to do chores, basically. Like, hey, gotcha. I paid money, so you need to do these chores. So I decided to download it, and they started explaining it to me and all this stuff. And at first, I'm like, this is so dumb. Like, nothing's happening. I'm just sitting here. And then I realized it's Google Maps. Like,
basically, yeah.
You don't move unless you physically move. And I was like, oh, I get the catch. Like, they want Americans to stop being fat. They want us to move.
It's the anti-Wally movement, if you ever saw Wally.
So I started moving, and I caught a few, and I was like, okay, this is kind of cool. So I got into it a little bit. I'm not saying I'm hardcore into it. I'm only, like, a level 6. I've got a good amount of Pokemon, but I'm not one of those people that's going out with my phone and, like, trying to find... Like, I haven't actually... I think once you get to level 5, you can start battling or go to gyms. Mm-hmm. I've never even ran into a gym while I'm a level 5. I've not sought one out. I have not tried. But overall, I won't crap on the game. I think it's pretty cool. I am shocked that it's as big as it is.
Me too.
There's several million free games that come out. I don't understand why this one in particular has blown up. But it has. I've seen plenty of... I've seen stuff on Facebook where I think it was in Central Park.
Yep.
Where what showed up? Charizard showed
up? Something, but I know there were like hundreds of people at once for a long period of time.
I saw them all running over, knocking each other over. It looked like it was a Black Friday, and they were all going to buy a sale. So.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'll tell you what. I'm kind of surprised. I didn't necessarily expect for you to crap all over it, maybe in jest a little bit, but I did expect you to say, nope, no interest. It's Pokemon plus casual mobile gaming. I'm out.
DFC.
Yeah. When I saw this one announced, and I remember watching the trailer for it, I remember thinking they're overselling it. It's not going to be as cool as the commercial makes it look, where it's a bunch of, you know, hipster college students hanging out in New Zealand catching Charizards out in the, you know, the plains of Mordor or whatever. Like, it looked beautiful and it looked ridiculous, and there's no way that's going to actually work. And so once it released and I saw people that don't even game that I know on social media talking about it, I was like, I should try this out. So I downloaded it, and a few other coworkers of mine also downloaded it. Shout out to Jake Roberson, who's a listener of the show, and he's someone that I work with now, and he also downloaded it. And it is insanely addictive, even though it's incredibly simple and has what I would call a very mediocre actual game at its core. The game itself isn't that great. The game itself is essentially you have to time your swipes when you're trying to catch them. You can get really good at the way you throw the Pokeballs to catch Pokemon. The battles themselves is simply just tap. You know, just tap the enemy you want to fight. The battles aren't hard. It's much more about just that scratching that itch of a collector. Did you ever collect anything when you were a kid, like outside of games? Did you ever collect anything?
Yeah, I collect sports cards.
Yeah, so I had baseball cards. I had some football cards. I also had a coin collection at one point. I had one of those little flip books with coins from, you know, different, you know, historical ages and from different countries. And when you get that new coin or that new card, or you get that rookie card of that player that you've been wanting, that's a good feeling. Like, you open up that pack and you flip through it, and then you find one that you didn't have. I liked that feeling. That's that collector's itch as you're filling out your collection. And when you get that, when it's properly scratched by the right game or by the right collection, then it feels really great. It's just it's kind of this little adrenaline rush of, hey, my collection is filling out. It looks amazing. And I think Pokemon Go is a digital version of that. And it does a couple things. Number one, it's gotten me and my family out of the house more than pretty much anything else has recently. Unless we really plan to, hey, we're all going to go bowling. Hey, we're all going to go get pizza. Hey, we're going to go see a movie. You know, we're going to go to the park and play for the afternoon. Those occasions, of course, we get out of the house. But this is one of those things where it's randomly like, hey, let's take a walk and catch some Pokemon together tonight. And we've done that almost every night this week. And, so it's gotten us out of the house. I've walked farther total distance this week than I probably have in a year or more. And because I just don't walk a lot. I drive everywhere I go. Sometimes I bike a little bit, but mostly I don't usually do a lot of walking or running, and so I've been on my feet a lot more than usual. Because let me just back up a little bit. For those of you who haven't downloaded it yet, it's a free download. You create your character with very incredibly limited options. They might as well just have one male, one female. You can change like their hair color and what kind of hat you want, basically. And then you are set into the world where it's this cartoon version of Google Maps, like Derek said. And you're kind of at an isometric view. You can zoom in and out. And it will show a fairly accurate representation of your street, your neighborhood, your workplace, wherever you're playing the game, based on your GPS location. So two things. One, you're going to want to always be connected to Wi-Fi or be willing to use some data on your phone. That's the only way it's going to work, just like if you used Google Maps and were getting directions. Yep. And the way it works is this company, Niantic, developed an app called Ingress. And I don't know all the details about the app, but I do know that they spent a lot of time and energy and resources developing, basically geocaching, every area in the world. Everything from landmarks to streets to geographic formations, bodies of water. And they used that framework to build Pokemon on top of. So it was this app they had developed originally called Ingress. Some of you out there might already know about this and know more about what it does. But all I know is that geocaching structure was already in place for Pokemon to be built. And so it shows where you are, and then based on where you are, you've got Pokestops all over the place where you can go and you can collect items, additional Pokeballs. It's basically a landmark of some kind, like a sign or some kind of structure or sculpture. And then you just get close enough to it and you spin the picture of it, and then out pops a few items for you. So that's one of the number one places that you want to go. And then, of course, there's gyms, which are going to be at bigger landmarks. A lot of times we see them at churches or at certain businesses. I saw them at this historical landmark near where I work, at a bookstore. They're all over the place. And so you find these gyms, and they're really tall. They look like towers on your map. And there's one of three teams that can claim those, and then they can leave one of their Pokemon there to defend it. And the idea is you and your team, if you're on red, blue, or yellow, you want to capture and defend as many of those towers as you can. It helps you earn experience and additional items. And if you see another color has taken it over, then you can go back and battle them. And the way battles work is you fight one Pokemon at a time. You start with the weakest, however many are dropped off at the gym there. I think they might have a limit of six. But you fight one at a time, and it works the same as a regular Pokemon battle in that you have six Pokemon you can pick from your collection. And then you just basically tap the screen to attack. You can swipe to dodge, but because of the lag, kind of the latency issues, I find that dodging is useless. So I just tap as fast as I can to try to take them down. And if you take them down, then you can pick which Pokemon you want to leave to defend it. And for as long as your Pokemon survives battles, you get extra experience points, extra items, so on and so forth. So that's the gist of how it works. And of course, like Derek said, you can walk around and your character will then move around in the world. And that's how you find Pokemon. They'll pop up. There's a little menu you can pull up that shows who's nearby and how far they are. But it's much more, it's not exactly a map to find all the ones that you want. It usually just tells you, hey, they're close by, or hey, they're far away, but they're in your vicinity. So that's the gist of how the game works. I do think it's a brilliant idea. It's just not always executed really well. Did you have any issues with it crashing or with it freezing up on you while you were playing it?
Yeah, in the beginning it was pretty bad. Like, it wasn't even, like, the day I downloaded it, I couldn't do a lot of things. It wouldn't even log into the server or whatever.
Right.
It just crashed. So.
Yeah, server issues are to be expected, I think, especially when it blows up the way that it has. I mean, it's just, it's beyond what anyone really guessed it would be in terms of popularity. So I think the overwhelming number of people using it has to be one of the major causes of the technical issues. Just like you said, my technical issues have kind of died down, at least as of yesterday. It's a weird phenomenon because as a gamer looking at it, I'm like, oh, this is kind of a neat idea. And I don't think I'll be that much more interested in it after the next week or so, maybe. I mean, I could be wrong. Maybe I'll continue to play it a lot.
I think it's going to have this boom that it has, and it'll die in a month or two. There'll still be players, but I don't think it's going to be something where
I agree. I think it's at least going to last for the summer in terms of its popularity. Unless they, of course, throw some kind of curveball and add some awesome features to the game. One other thing that they do is Pokemon, for the most part, the types of Pokemon you see are based on your location, the climate type of region that you're in. Like, if you're by the coast, you're going to see a lot more water Pokemon that someone like me, living on the interior of the country by mountains, I'm not going to see. But I see a ton of rock types and some fire types and flying types and stuff that maybe other areas won't see. So it does depend on your location, which is kind of interesting. The one drawback there is, of course, how can you complete your collection unless you have money to travel and time to travel? And so one feature that I've heard they're going to be adding at some point is a trade feature, which would probably inject some extra life into it. So anyway, it's fascinating to me, and I think it's very interesting. It is kind of fun to play. I do find myself checking it more often than I've checked any other app that I've downloaded. But obviously, it does not feel like playing a video game. It feels a lot more like a travel companion app to me than anything else. But it's very fun. My kids absolutely love it. So last night I took them over to the local college campus where we could just park. There's hardly anybody on campus. And there were like 7 Pokestops there because of the landmarks on campus. We just walked around catching Pokemon and spending the Pokestops for like 2 hours. So it's become a really cool way to hang out with your kids and spend time outside.
If I stay in this, it'll be because of my kids. Like, I know my daughter Emily downloaded it, and so when we drive to daycare, her and I will, like, talk about, like, what she's seeing, what she's fighting, you know, while we're driving.
Yep.
And then my youngest, Eli, the one that's into Pokemon, I guess, kind of, even though he's never really played a Pokemon game, he always asks for my phone, be like, well, what do I do? What do I do? So
right.
I'm going to sit down and teach him how to play it, how to move, and I don't think he understands the Google Map part of it, so I'll do that with him. But if it lasts at all in this family, it'll be because we do it together. Otherwise, as somebody who owns hundreds and hundreds of games, it's not a top 500 game to me. I don't care about it that much. So it's not something I'm going to go back to.
I discovered that I cared more about it than I thought when my daughter wasted like 30 Pokeballs trying to catch a Zubat. And I was like, stop wasting the balls. And then I was like, wait a minute. I guess I care about this stupid thing. But anyway, it is a lot of fun. So especially if you have kids, I recommend it. If you are looking for an excuse to get out and about and you want to still kind of do a little gaming while you're doing it, this is a great way to do it. One of the drawbacks, though, is that you can't close the app. It has to be active. It'd be great if you could just minimize it and then put it in your pocket. And while you're on your walk, maybe it notifies you, hey, so-and-so Pokemon's nearby. That'd be a cool feature if they added that. But a couple quick stats. It's just interesting to me that already, since I think it officially released on July 6th, I want to say, in all in the major regions at least, it's the top download on both Android and iOS already. And as of 4 days ago, it was making about 1.6 million per day. And that could totally be more than that by now. And that's just from the Apple Store. That's 1.6 million per day. Yes, it's a free download. And also, yes, you can buy Pokecoins to buy extra items, extra lures, extra Pokeballs. You can buy more incubators because you get these eggs and you put them in an incubator. And then as you travel certain distances, they'll hatch. So they have.
They're getting all this money from people buying stuff, or are they getting this? Is this 1.6 million from companies paying them?
It's a combination of all those things. I don't think there's advertising going on just yet, but companies are definitely using Pokemon Go. They're paying to have a lore module placed on nearby Pokestops. So there's this little shopping center right near my office. And there's almost always a lore module on multiple Pokestops in there where businesses have said, hey, there's a landmark beside us. Customer or potential customers are coming by with their phones to check in the Pokestop. Let's make sure there's always a lore there, which basically increases the chances of Pokemon showing up within that area. And so businesses are paying. It only lasts for 30 minutes, and they can continue to pay to place additional modules there. It doesn't cost them that much for how much foot traffic they're getting right to their businesses. So businesses are taking advantage of it, and it's working. Yelp has even added a filter. So if you're on Yelp looking for businesses, they've added a filter for businesses that have nearby Pokestops. That's how big it is. Yelp is like, hey, we need to get on this Pokestop train, this Pokemon Go train. In Asia, McDonald's is teaming up with Pokemon, and most of their locations are going to become gyms or Pokestops. And so McDonald's is getting on there too. And what's funny about this is that Nintendo didn't make this game. I made the mistake of thinking this is one of Nintendo's mobile apps, you know, that they've talked about how they're rolling into mobile. This is not Nintendo. Nintendo basically had nothing to do with this other than owning a share of the IP. This was all the Pokemon Company, and it's developed by Niantic, the company that made Ingress, that other app I talked about. But Nintendo shares, even though their name's not even on this app anywhere, are up 86%. And I'm sure Nintendo's making money on this. They own at least a portion of that IP along with the Pokemon Company. I am pretty sure they're making money on every dollar that's made from this game, and now their stock is going through the roof. Good. Because all of a sudden their value is just skyrocketing.
I root for Nintendo, so you know, even though this isn't what I would want from them, I want to see them do well in hopes that they will do stuff that I want them
to. I totally agree. I feel like when Nintendo has money coming in, they tend to get a little more creative and start making things happen. So hopefully that'll happen. But I find that very interesting that Nintendo has not a lot to do with it, and they're getting a ton of credit for it. And that, I'm guilty of that. I was like, oh, man, Nintendo really knocked this one out of the park. And then I realized, oh, Nintendo didn't do anything with this. I mean, it's not directly. This wasn't their project. But anyway, so let me ask you this before we move on to other topics. We'll get off of Pokemon Go here in a second. What other franchises, can you think of any other franchises or maybe even just app ideas that could use this augmented reality and geocaching tech for a gamer app? Is there anything else that you could see seeing this idea and running with it with their IP, whether it's game related or not?
I think somebody like Final Fantasy could do like a Google Maps type game where you travel, and then you could fight enemies through that travel, and then they could open up certain businesses to be caves or whatever, something like that, where you actually would battle bosses or something. But I think Final Fantasy could do something like that. Use that type of technology.
One of my coworkers mentioned, hey, they should use that AR technology to shoot zombies, and then that made me think, what if they actually created a Walking Dead survival type of an app where certain locations are safe houses and you can gather supplies to help fight zombie hordes and things like that? They could somehow use geocaching in your actual location for players of whatever zombie app to gather together, you know, build up a safe house, gather supplies, and then fight off zombies together. They could do that. That would be a little more challenging as opposed to just collecting. But I could see them doing something like that too. The obvious ones are things like, you know, Dragon Quest. They had that monsters game where you can collect monsters, or Digimon, or some of these other, you know, collect monsters and have them fight for you. Maybe even someone's going to bring back Monster Rancher out of, you know, back from the dead, if you remember that game. So yeah, there's some other ways that these games, this technology could be used. I'm just curious to see what happens next. If it's going to be a game, what franchise will it be? So
I just think it would be cool if you did, like, if you did something like Final Fantasy where it required you to travel for you to actually move on the map to then unlock doing more things.
Yeah, and then you have, like, random battles as you're traveling, just like you do in Final Fantasy. That could be really neat. Yeah, I like that idea. And it, again, just like this Pokemon Go is an extremely light version of the game. It's actually not even at all like the game other than you're capturing monsters. The regular Pokemon games are very much about leveling up and getting the right team together and about element styles, what beats what. This is much more about collection. So Final Fantasy doesn't need to be the in-depth, full-blown Final Fantasy RPG experience. It could be a much lighter version of that. But I don't know if they did battles kind of like, maybe not totally like Infinity Blade, but something where you're swiping the screen and attacking. It could be really neat if they did that with Final Fantasy.
Yeah, but you could also, the reason why I brought up Final Fantasy, or you could use any major JRPG, is turn-based combat can be used on any system. Like,
oh, that's a good
point. You can use turn-based on anything. Like, it doesn't require, like, a next-gen system to put turn-based combat on there.
That's a good call.
So, phone is so easy. That's why I think a lot of those JRPGs that are released are on mobile. That's probably the major reason why they do it. They're like, oh, we can create these worlds on here, and the battle system will work.
That's a really good point.
Whereas we can't take like an action RPG and make it work with the controls.
If you had to guess, why do you think that this version of Pokemon, they decided not to use their classic turn-based battle styles? Like, why do they just go to a tap style of fighting?
Because I think right now, I think they wanted to just draw in a crowd. I don't think they knew the crowd would be this big. But I think they wanted to keep it simple, stupid. Like, just make it something light and fun.
Accessible,
accessible, and they've done that. And like I said, I think they expected, with the Pokemon name attached to it, to do pretty well. I just don't even think the creators were sitting back going, this is going to happen.
Yeah, no, I don't think they knew
either.
Mm-hmm.
They're probably sitting in their, sitting in money right now going, wow, this is unbelievable.
Yeah, well, I'm hoping that all this influx of money, with all the money that they're making from this, I hope it means they're going to be regularly improving and fine-tuning the game. I mean, there's some technical glitches to work out. Hopefully they can fine-tune some of that and stabilize the servers a bit as time goes on. But I would love to see them add features like trading, maybe even player versus player battles of some kind, and then maybe someday in some 2.0 version, go ahead and implement your full turn-based battles for the gyms, at least. That'd be really great. So, one more thing to keep in mind, this is only out in limited markets so far. They're still rolling out new markets. Just yesterday they added places like Germany and Italy, and their goal is 200 markets total. And so this thing's only going to keep making money, at least for the short term, before, like you said, the fad kind of dies away. But even Donald Trump and Hillary have weighed in on this, and I haven't read their tweets, but I've seen headlines about how they've weighed in on the Pokemon Go craze. So pretty crazy. One last thing that does bother me, and I've seen it a lot, especially on Facebook, is I hear criticism from people who won't try it, they don't play it, they're not gamers. It's the same people a lot of times who criticize gaming in general, as being like for kids or whatever. And I see people criticizing it, but yet those same people, and a few of them I know, they'll be the first ones to play Candy Crush or something like that for hours on end. Or they're the same ones who have other hobbies that you could point to and say that's kind of childish. Or they're super into wrestling still. You know, it's really interesting to me to see people criticize something like, oh, that's for kids. I can't believe these adults are playing this Pokemon Go game. I get a little annoyed. I get a little irked when I hear people criticizing others' hobbies. I don't see how that benefits you. I don't to make fun of someone else just because you don't necessarily like the same hobby.
Personally have not seen a lot of criticism, like from my friends on Facebook or anything. If anything, I was the skeptic when I heard about it.
Well, that's why I wanted to bring it up. It's time to confront you.
Yes, it is. But I didn't make fun of people, but I did definitely think it was stupid. But then right. I saw a post, and I thought this was really good, so I'll just mention it real quick before we move on. Jose Jimenez posted that he's like, with all the recent news this past week of just terrible killings, and we talked about this last week a little bit.
Yep.
You know, cops getting shot, black people getting shot by cops when it didn't look exactly justified. Not going to debate that here. But then you have all these terrorist attacks. So you have all these terrible things happening, right?
Absolutely.
And then something brings people together. Yeah. Whether you like it or not, this, and I'll call it dumb. I think it's dumb. But if it's bringing people together, if they're running to Central Park and playing and talking and building some type of relationship through it, why would you hate on it?
Yeah, totally agree.
There's zero reason. So I really appreciated that post. I thought it was a great post with a great point. Like, there's no point in hating on something like that when there's so much hate already in this world.
Totally
Let
agree.
People enjoy it. Yeah. Let them have fun. It'll die eventually. Let them enjoy it. And hey, maybe even give it a shot. Because like I said, as a person who can't stand Pokemon, I gave it a shot. And I think it's pretty good. And yeah. I'll probably, after we get off recording this, probably check my game and see what's going on.
Yeah. Yeah, well said. And good post by Jose. I saw that too. So well said and good thought. And I do want to make sure that we do recognize, I know last week we talked about some of the shootings that have happened. I also want to recognize the absolutely horrific attack that happened in Paris as well. It's just horrible that people of any group, of any creed, any no matter what belief system you claim, that they could take the lives of others the way that lives are being taken for whatever their motivation they claim is. It's just so heartbreaking and so horrible. So I didn't want to get through the episode without mentioning that. I don't want you guys to think that we only mentioned certain tragedies. So we do acknowledge that, and thoughts and prayers go out to those families. All right, let's move on from Pokemon Go. Let's stop talking about Pokemon Go. Let's shift
Please.
Our gaze to other gaming news. There are some other things that are happening besides Pokemon. By the way, it feels weird. It feels like it's 20 years ago. We have a Clinton-run president, and everyone's playing Pokemon. It's really strange.
And Blink-182 released.
And Blink-182 released an album. What is happening right now? Oh, boy. Anyway, so we know that No Man's Sky is coming out. We just now got the release date recently. It's coming out on August 9th. That's less than a month away. So if you're excited about it and have it pre-ordered like I do, like some
Apparently,
kind of fool.
I'm super excited about it because I texted Tim. And I was like, I just realized my vacation is during No Man's Sky's release. So
That's
apparently
right.
I planned this out.
You did.
Like, I knew the delay was going to happen. So I was like, I better jump on this because everybody at my job, obviously, is really excited for No Man's Sky.
I'm excited, but Derek is, like, uber hyped. That's crazy hype right there.
I don't, like, hate to just be cool. I try to understand things even if I dislike it. And I'm like, I've watched stuff, and I just look at the game, and I'm like, okay, I can see it looks cool. I can even imagine it could be cool, but I also think they're so limited that I'm like, and this is just my style of gaming, I'm like, they're going to bore me to death. Like, I'm going to explore one planet and be like, that's it? I just went and picked plants and shot an animal, and that was it? Okay. And I'll probably delete it, but still am intrigued by it. I'm excited that it's finally coming out. I'm more excited just to see what it is. If I genuinely like it, you'll see me post about how much I like it. If I think it's trash, I'll obviously say that. I do want to just see what it is. I want to know what it is.
Yeah. No, I'm excited for it. I do think it's going to be a fun game. I have a feeling that it's going to do exactly what all the skeptics are saying, and that is it's going to get old after... I don't know how many planets it's going to take, but there's going to come a point when I realize, oh, that's how they make this thing so big and so vast, is they repeat this part of it over and over again. You know, it kind of goes through this formula over and over again. But I do think there's going to be several hours of gaming to be had before that occurs. So,
yeah.
All right, so let's talk about another game that's coming out in August is Telltale's Batman game. It's going to release digitally in August, and they will sometime this coming week with a new trailer, they will announce the exact release date. So you'll be able to play that digitally in August. I don't know exactly when. Probably towards the end of August, if I had to guess. And then in September, you'll be able to buy a physical copy of Telltale's Batman game. Is this one that you are looking forward to, or are you going to be waiting until, you know, you have time to get into a story type of a game?
Oh, I'm really excited about this game. I like Telltale's a lot, and even though I got kind of, like, sick of their style of games, the Game of Thrones Telltale game kind of got me back into it, like, lured me back in. Mm-hmm. I don't think Batman will be, you know, I don't know if they'll be able to pull off the twists that other Telltale games have, but we'll see what they can do. I'm interested in seeing how they pull this off. But, yeah, okay. I'm really excited.
I'm curious to see how they roll out the episodes this time, because it is episode one available in August and then September physically. And then if you buy those, of course, you have access to the others as they release. But I'm just wondering, will it be mid-2017 until we actually get the final episode of the season?
Well, even know how many episodes there are?
Five.
Have they announced there are five? Okay.
There's going to be five.
I just didn't want it to be like Michonne, where it's only three.
Where it's three. No, it's supposed to be five episodes, four yet to be determined when they will release. But
yeah, anyway, I would imagine their track record, it'll probably be one episode on average every 2 months.
Yep, that's what I'm thinking too, which is why I'll probably try to wait unless this becomes one of those games that everyone's talking about and I have to play it. Then I'll go ahead and get the season pass and dive into it. But very exciting, though. I am excited to see a new Telltale game come out. I still enjoy their games despite their engine struggles. All right, so we also know that Nintendo is going to be releasing this fall a mini Nintendo Entertainment System. And the long and short of this is basically they're going to release a miniature version of what looks like a very classic NES. It's going to come with 30 games already installed. You don't have to change out cartridges or anything. It does not connect to internet. I know Derek was going to ask us. We've talked about this already. I think we were playing Rocket League, we even talked about it. It does not connect to internet. It does not take any kind of USB input, which all but confirms there's no additional games that can be added to it. Mm-hmm. So the 30 classic games that you get, your Mario, your Zelda, your Metroid, Donkey Kong, and so on, that's what you get. For $60, you get those games and I think two controllers. And it makes for a decent Christmas present for some. I do think this is mainly going to be for those who don't already have systems maybe and want to play some old retro games. I've got some family members I can think of who aren't super into gaming now, but they'd probably love this as a gift to play some old games like when they were kids. So yeah, that's coming out in November.
Yeah, it's got a great lineup. I don't think I'll get it because of what you just said, that they're not going to let you download anymore. And most of those mm-hmm. games that I care about, I already own. But I think it's still a cool announcement. And it's something Nintendo's doing that is like from the past, so they're not really doing anything new, but then modernizing it, so it's a little bit cooler. But I'd still like to see them take this money that I know they're going to get a killing off this Pokemon. Let's do something mm-hmm. cool, fresh, and new.
Yep. I really hope that we're going to see something new from them. With everything from Pokemon Go that we just talked about for a long time at the start of the show, and then with this, I hope that we're building up to some kind of new, groundbreaking thing from Nintendo.
Yep.
I really hope so.
I hope that the NX is very, very powerful and very up to date. That's what I'm hoping.
Yeah, me too. All right, well, let's talk about one last news item, one last announcement, and that involves Gears of War. I'm actually going to let you talk about this, but we do know that the Xbox One S, the new model of Xbox One, is going to be coming out this fall. But tell me a little bit about this Gears of War 4 themed system that's coming out.
Let me just do what I always do and set the stage just a little bit. I was completely shocked at E3, and I didn't realize it until after I processed it, meaning watched the entire Microsoft E3 presentation, which I enjoyed, but it didn't hit me until like maybe a couple weeks after, and I was like, oh, they didn't announce a Gears of War console. And I know I've had several conversations with like Rob Rinaldi, not Ronaldo, Rinaldi, about a Gears of War Xbox. I think we talked about it when the Halo one was announced, and we were like, both of us were like, Halo one's really cool, but we want a Gears. So they didn't announce it, so I was like, wow, when I started looking into pre-ordering the game, I was like, I guess they're not going to announce this. Well, it slipped out, I guess. I don't know if they really officially released the announcement, but they basically have come out and said that they're creating a Gears of War Xbox One S, which is the new version of the Xbox One, which is 4K ability. It has a 500 gigabyte, a 1 terabyte, and a 2 terabyte option. This particular one comes out October 7th. It is a 2 terabyte option. I think
that's so awesome.
Yeah, I think it's the only way you can get it. I don't think you can buy it on smaller gigabyte options. It's a 2 terabyte option. And it comes with, this is the cool part. Not only is it absolutely gorgeous, and go check out pictures of it if you haven't seen it.
What does it look like? Just give a quick description of what it looks like.
It kind of looks like the 360 one, which I really, really liked. And that is, it's all red and black. It's very dark
theme. Like a dark blood red.
Yes, yeah. And I really, really like that because I love my Xbox 360. And so I really, really want this one. It's very beautiful. And it comes out at the price of $450. Now, that's $50 more than the 2 terabyte white one. Okay? So think about that. So here's how my brain thought. Oh, it comes with Gears of War. So they're basically giving you Gears of War for $50. But then I looked it up, and I realized they're giving you the Ultimate Edition, which is a $100 package. So they're giving you the $100 version for $50. So that's a really good deal.
And that includes the season pass and things like that?
So there's a few things that you get. You get the season pass. You get to keep. You get all the DLC that comes out, and you own it. That means you can actually like create games, like private matches and stuff like that for multiplayer and all that stuff. You also get the game 4 days early. So the game comes out officially October 11th. But if you buy the Ultimate Edition, you get it October 7th. So that is when they're releasing this Xbox One S. So it's $450. I really, really want it. I'm really, really hoping GameStop will do some promotion. Like, hey, trade in your Xbox One. We'll give you $150, $200 towards an Xbox One S. And if they do that...
And don't forget this is an Xbox Play Anywhere game. So that means that the download code will give you access on both the One and Windows 10 PC.
Yep.
So... Which is an interesting... Well, we can talk about this some other time. Is that a good strategy for Microsoft or not? But for the consumer, it certainly feels pretty awesome to know you have access to it. If you also have a PC that runs games, you have access to it there, too.
Yep. So I'm going to try to get it. I really want it. I think if you looked at it, really saw it, you'd probably appreciate how beautiful the console is.
Well, I know they're releasing the controllers a little bit early. I'm just looking at the same article here. So you can get those controllers in September. I think you already mentioned that. But you can also get the JD Phoenix gray and blue armor-inspired controller, which is a really cool dark slate gray controller with blue accents on it. It's a cool-looking controller. Those are each going to be $75. They include a multiplayer emblem and 3 Gears packs. So it gives you some in-game stuff as well with those controllers. They're sold exclusively at GameStop and online in the Microsoft Store. So... Microsoft is doing some cool things this fall. Even though, of course, the PS4 is just trouncing it in terms of sales, Microsoft is not slowing down in terms of their creative ideas and trying to keep up, but also take their own path a little bit away from what Sony's doing. So I like it. I like what they're doing. All right, that's enough of news. That's enough of headlines. Guys, this has been a little bit of a rough recording for us. We've had interruptions on both sides, both related to tech, related to family. So it's been, you know, it kind of... embodies what the whole title of our podcast is, Fathers of the Grind. This is all part of life. It's part of, I mean, getting 10 minutes alone just to use the bathroom is one thing, but getting an hour plus of quiet to record a show, nearly impossible. So anyway, it's been one of those days. But anyway, thank you guys for listening. We're going to cover one last topic here, but just want to interrupt real quick to say thank you for listening. Thank you for supporting. And for those of you who share the show, who you listen regularly, feel free to, if you think of any other gamers who might be a good addition to our community, go ahead and add them to our group on Facebook, Fathers of the Grind. Make sure you tell them about the show. We do try to keep it somewhat family friendly since it's from a parent's perspective on gaming. If you want to hear someone swear, just play Rocket League with Derek. You'll hear some swearing there.
No, I never. But
all right, I want to close us out with a topic that I thought was kind of interesting, and I got some community thoughts on this too. In our Facebook group, and that is toughest boss battles. The reason I thought about this was I just finished up The Witcher 3 Blood and Wine DLC last week, and the final boss battle for me, since Snobby Tim only plays on hardest of hardcore modes.
Oh, yeah.
The final boss battle was quite challenging. It took me several tries. A couple of times I got him down to the sliver of health that you needed to move on to the next section of the battle, and I died. And it was frustrating. And so that reminded me of a few of the other boss battles I've experienced in my time of gaming. So I wanted to hear from you your thoughts, and I've also thrown together a list here, pulled from other websites, other lists, as well as some of our community members sharing their thoughts. So when I say tough boss battles, I guess I could say in general, or ask in general, what games come to mind. I think I know what your answer will be.
Yeah.
But also what bosses in particular come to mind when I say tough boss battles.
All right, pops in your head? So before I state the obvious, I would say going back to my youth, one of the ones that I struggled with the most was Shao Kahn from Mortal Kombat 2.
Absolutely.
Pretty much impossible to beat. I don't even know if I ever beat him. I may have beat him once, but it was... I played that game a lot. I'm talking thousands of hours, probably. It was my favorite game as a kid. And I just don't remember ever being able to beat him. He was so cheesy. Like, it was just unfair. It was more unfair programming than it was... Hey, let's give you a fair fight, but we're gonna also make it challenging. It was.
Yeah, Jose agrees with you. By the way, that's one that Jose listed.
I didn't see the post, so I didn't have any. Yeah, but he's absolutely terrible.
Yeah. Speaking of old school fighting games, I remember thinking, at least on some of the harder modes, that M. Bison from Street Fighter 2 was really tough. Some of his attacks that went across the entire screen were hard to dodge. Once you kind of mastered that fight, it didn't feel quite as hard. Every time you go back to beat it again with a new character to run through another story mode in that game. But M. Bison was a tough fight. Probably not as hard, as unfairly hard as Shao Kahn, though. That one, even though I'm not a Mortal Kombat gamer, I do remember that fight. I can't remember if I ever played it, but I'm pretty sure I saw it. So let's think of some other classic ones. We've got, do you ever play Streets of Rage 1 or 2?
I did. I just don't remember them. But I played
them The final boss, Mr. X, was an absolute beast. Super annoying. He had a ton of health, and he had these dual-wielding machine guns, and he would just jump around and shoot everywhere. And he had his little minions coming in off-screen like crazy. So that was a really tough boss battle. That was frustrating. That's actually one that my wife and I played together, start to finish. I think more than once
we've
played that one through. But Mr. X was really hard. We had to play that on easier difficulty setting, if I remember correctly. There might not be a difficulty setting, but anyway, I remember it being tough. One other one that comes to mind, it's not so much that it was a hard battle to fight, it's more of figuring out how to beat him. Took a while for me, and that was Psycho Mantis in Metal Gear Solid for the PS1. Did you ever play that game? I forget.
My friend did. I just watched him.
Do you remember that boss fight? You remember seeing it? It was like super creepy as he's like floating around the office there.
Yeah, but I don't remember anything about it. Like, you would have to tell me why it was difficult because I didn't play it.
Well, you can't hurt him. Like, you can't beat him. And then your controls are all weird. And there's a few secrets, and he hints at them. There's also a secret that involves, at one point in the game, a secret that involves looking at the back of your case, of the old PS1 case. Mm. There's a certain radio dial you have to find there to discover some secrets. But yeah, the Psycho Mantis fight. Spoilers if you never played the game and you want to experience it fresh. This game that's super old for some reason. But when you're playing Psycho Mantis, you lose control. Like, you can't fight, and then you die. You can't control your character. And that's because he took control of you. What you have to do is take your controller out of the Player 1 port and put it in Player 2. And then you can control him again.
Yeah.
It's like the most bizarre little switch. And when it struck me and I figured out how to do it, it was a really cool feeling, a really awesome moment. It was more of a puzzle to solve.
So that's one of those, and I have heard of this before, that's one of those genius design moves that, and I don't know if the boss after it is really difficult, but the actual figuring it out, and that's probably pre, you know, where you got walkthroughs on the internet. You know, maybe there was some out there, but there wasn't. Not as like right now I can go on and look up almost any game and there's a walkthrough.
Absolutely. I know I didn't look at one to beat it, but I know they existed.
Yeah, and so that's one of those where it's like, we were talking about this probably a month or so ago when we were talking about Dark Souls, how one of the things I appreciated is the mystery behind it. The fact that they'll trick you And you, even though there's the internet now and we can go check stuff, they still make it difficult to figure out some of the tricks on your own.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's the difference between something like Shao Kahn from Mortal Kombat 2 or something like Psycho Mantis from Metal Gear Solid. One is simply programming it to be insanely hard, almost to the point of being totally unfair. And the other one is just great game design that's challenging the player to think outside the box.
Yeah.
There's a difference.
Yeah.
And I really appreciate when it's done in a way that kind of makes you smile after. Like, even though you were frustrated, when you finally figured out, you're like, wow, that was smart.
Yeah.
Like, I even remember when Psycho Mantis is talking to you, he reads your memory card and says, oh, it looks like you like to play Suikoden because it's a Konami game. I remember him mentioning that one in particular. I was like, huh? How did he know that? So, like, it's really cool the way that they link those things together in certain boss battles. And there's other ones that are just so insanely hard. You already mentioned Shao Kahn. But what about Mike Tyson from Punch-Out? And they later renamed him to Mr. Dream when they took Mike Tyson out of the game. Did you ever play Punch-Out? Or did you ever watch someone try to play against Mike Tyson?
Yeah, I played Punch-Out a lot. I think we got to Mike Tyson a few times. I used to play with a buddy. But I don't know if
he's impossible for me, at least. I couldn't beat him. Yeah, I always thought he was impossible.
First of all, to get to Mike Tyson almost feels impossible. The game overall is very, very, very difficult.
Well, the first few belts that you win are very doable.
Mm-hmm.
Like, pretty much every playthrough I could get to through the first one and then usually get through the second one. But then after that, it got real tough, and I'm blanking out a lot of their names. But I remember I loved fights against guys like King Hippo, because there was just that little secret where you hit him in the belly and stuff like that. But then as it moves on, you get past the tiger guy and then the Raging Bull dude, and it just gets tougher. It gets tougher. Or Bald Bull, I guess it was. It just gets tougher as you go. So, but I thought Mike Tyson was unfairly hard. One of the ones that was brought up a few times in our group was Sephiroth in Kingdom Hearts, I think 1 and 2, but especially 2 was brought up, the Sephiroth fight. I don't know what fight that is, but it's mentioned on many lists, too. If you search hardest boss battles, that Sephiroth battle is mentioned by many people. Let me try to jump through the list here. Oh, here's one I experienced a couple years ago. I guess it was last year. Titan Souls, that little game I've mentioned before. It's a 16-bit downloadable indie game where it's just boss battles. And the final they're all hard, but the final one is against a dark version of yourself. Think kind of like old school Zelda. And it is virtually impossible. I actually won by luck. I was about to give up. I had tried for like an hour and a half, close to 2 hours, and I was about to give up. And I actually just scored one luck shot towards the end and beat it. And my hands were sweaty, and I almost threw the controller. Like, I got really frustrated at that. I thought that that was a little unfair for those of you who have played that game too. Let me ask you about one that I haven't played, but you have. I keep hearing about the final boss battle in Quantum Break.
Yeah, I mean, some people said it's easy. I didn't think it was easy because it's kind of like, use the example of Mr. X from Streets of Rage 2. It's not exactly like that, but I think it's kind of the same design as far as you have this one BA villain who has this one attack that covers a huge area that can insta-kill you. And that's the final boss guy. And then you have, at the same time, while you're trying to pay attention to what he's doing, you have minions, and some of them are real tough. Like, some of them were fully armored minions that take a lot of bullets and a lot of precise shots to kill. And so when you have all of them shooting while trying to dodge this one attack, now, it's fair in the fact that it shows you the screen's turning red, and if you're in the red, you're dead. And if you get out of the red, you're fine. So it's fair in that sense, but it was very difficult because I struggle with boss battles that rely on me to pay attention to 9 different things at one time. And that was what I was struggling with. I could get away from him and his attack, but then while I'm doing that, I was getting shot by the big armored dude who's very powerful, and he would kill me in like 3 shots. So it wasn't until I went to a guy that said, hey, grab this gun that's in this pool, and it's really super powerful, and then kill those guys, and then do this, and then I was like, oh, I got it, and I beat it. So it is definitely difficult. I would say, to name off a quick few that I've thought about, I don't know if you played Metal Gear Solid 3, but I thought this one was a cool one, and it was more difficult for me because of how I played the game. but it was the Sorrow boss, I believe his name was.
Yeah.
And so I'm playing the game, and I don't understand why I'm walking through this river with all these things coming at me. And it was, and then I found out after I finally beat it that everybody that was in the river with me was everybody I had killed. And I killed a lot. I know a lot of people play.
That was mind blowing.
A lot of people play Metal Gear to play like stealthy, and they like to put people to sleep. I play Metal Gear to be semi stealthy and put a lot of people to dead. And so
put them to dead.
Yes, I wanted them all dead. And so when I got to that boss fight, I'm not saying the boss fight's really, really hard. What I'm saying, this is another one where it's like he's thinking outside of the box. And when you realize what Kojima's, I don't even know how to say his name right now. You want to say it for me?
Kojima.
I'm not even going to say it right.
Hideo Kojima.
There you go. I'm like, keep going off on a different name.
Michael Ruby.
Kojimi. So, anyways, so as I was playing it, and once I figured out what he had done there, and that he was punishing me for playing the game incorrectly, I thought that was genius. So I wanted to give that one a shout out. Also want to give a shout out to, I'm not going to go into particulars, but any of the Souls games, but in particular Dark Souls 3 and Bloodborne, they're well thought out bosses. Yeah, there are some that are extremely easy, but there are some that are beyond challenging to the fact that I've actually talked about the game several times on here, and there are still bosses, even though I've played Bloodborne and Dark Souls 3 twice, that I cannot beat solo. I tried, but I can't beat them. There's only a handful of them, but they are difficult, and some of them, there's at least one of them that I really believe he's impossible. I don't think I could, I'm talking about me personally, ever beat him. I know other people have, but I couldn't. So definitely
Our buddy Moose Cluel threw out a boss from Bloodborne, Parle. I don't know if that rings any bells for you.
Darkest Parle?
I guess. He says, he lists Bloodborne, and he says, most importantly, Parle.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure who Parle is, but Jesse White, of course, lists Soulsborne, all of it. Well said, Jesse. Soulsborne. Let's see. Let me throw a few others here. Jonathan Sundberg says Sam from Metal Gear Solid Revengeance.
Yeah, that was the other one. I was going to say Revengeance's final boss, and maybe his name was Sam. Again, I go blank on names.
If that's a spoiler, I apologize. I don't know who it is.
Maybe it is. Oh, well, who cares? It's kind of an old game. But that game was ridiculously hard, too. And then the other one that I wanted to mention is, and I, again, won't know the name, but Prototype. If you've ever played Prototype, I got to the last boss battle, and I remember this night, and I was like, oh, I'm about ready to beat it. And I'm the type, like, when I'm close to beating a game, I just lock in, and it doesn't matter how late it is at night, I want to beat it, I want to finish it, and I stay up. Even if I've got to wake up 3 hours later. And that's what happened to me. It was a Sunday night. I was playing Prototype. And I was like, oh, I'm at the end. And it was like 11 o'clock at night. And I usually try to go to bed around 11:30. I was like, let me just beat it, and then I'll go to bed. It was like 2 in the morning. And I was still fighting this guy. I was cursing. I was throwing things. It was another one of those boss battles where you have 9,000 things happening at once. The final boss to me was OP. He was just one-shotting me or two-shotting me, and it was just so frustrating. So I guess maybe that's just my weakness, is Quantum Break and Prototype-style bosses that are just quick hitters, you're dead. Like those, because I'm always going to make at least one or two mistakes. And in Dark Souls, while they can be unforgiving, to a certain extent, if you're powerful enough, because they work in the same type of RPG design, like, hey, go grind. If you grind, then you become more powerful. And you become more powerful, then you can make a mistake or two when you're fighting a boss and still live.
And survive.
Yes. Yeah. And so I appreciate those games for that reason. But when it's a game like Prototype or something like that, when you've done most of the upgrades and then you're just fighting, and I can't go out and grind more. I can't go backwards. It becomes frustrating.
Yep. No, that's a good call. I'm actually in agreement with you there. Those types of boss fights frustrate me to no end. Philippe Tezar says, the entire experience on impossible difficulty of XCOM Enemy Unknown.
Oh, I would agree on that.
I think on regular difficulty that game is tough. I would never try it on impossible. And he said it's like one big huge boss. That's how tough it is, and it's not easy. Nate Bacon says it's not a boss, but this level that he remembers from Call of Duty 4 called the Mile High Club, and I believe that's where you're assaulting a plane. I can't remember exactly the mission, but he's saying that particular mission was insanely hard. Alan agrees with you about Quantum Break. It's not hard. It's just unfair and cheap. And yeah, there's a few others that have commented on there too, but there are certainly some boss fights that are fun, challenging, and there are some that are ridiculously over the top, unfair, challenging. Like Ratchet and Clank, in particular, the final boss, I thought was fun, challenging. It's really tough, but if you upgrade the right guns and you learn how to use that jetpack, it's actually a very satisfying victory when you finally win. Or God of War 3, the final battle against a certain god is very tough but pretty rewarding because you have to use all your skills and abilities and weapons at your disposal to beat him or her, I won't tell you. And Final Fantasy VII, Sephiroth, as well as the Emerald and Ruby weapons, which are optional bosses, some of those battles in Final Fantasy VII were insanely tough. And that applies for pretty much all Final Fantasy games. They usually have some kind of ultimate weapons that you can battle in those games. And the list goes on. We'll stop it right there, but the list continues. And if you guys want to weigh in on this, feel free to comment on the post for this episode. I want to hear about more boss battles that you've fought that are frustratingly, unfairly difficult, as well as satisfyingly difficult. There's a big difference, and they all stick with us for one reason or another. So, all right, well, that will wrap us up for this week. Again, it's been a very interesting experience recording the episode this week, but we want to make sure we continue to make sure we have an episode for you each week to listen to. Some of you, I know this is your Monday routine. You wake up Monday morning, download the show, and then you mock us on your drive to work. So we don't want to miss that for you.
I think you're describing my mornings.
That is your morning. You're sitting there mocking us.
I do. I download the show, I listen to it, and then I mock us.
Yeah. Thanks, buddy. That's good. Yeah. All right. Well, thank you all for listening. I hope you have a great week. Hope your summer's going really well. Again, feel free to share the show, invite friends. They don't have to be parents to join the group and be part of it. But we do want to make sure that our community continues to grow. So thank you for listening. Have a great week. See ya.
Who is your daddy?
I am the father.
You fathers will understand.
My father taught me many things here.
I got an idea. How about you all sit there quietly while I make dad noises?